de Avignon. Fingertips. I like the way that you move your hips. I like the cool way you look at me. Everything about you is bringing me misery. But I know what I like. I like the way.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The SEIU is preparing to join Hispanic leaders and pro-immigrant groups in protesting California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's veto of legislation that would have allowed illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. And supporters charge that a last-minute demand by Schwarzenegger to place a mark on licenses that would differentiate them from those held by legal residents and citizens would have encouraged discrimination if implemented. The Service Employees International Union has more than 30,000 members across California, and has promised to assist the proponents of the legislation in boycotting and protesting at convention centers and hotels across the state.
New Bush administration rules could squeeze low-income tenants out of their homes. George Bush wants to alter the formula used to calculate an average rent price. The Mass Alliance of HUD tenants warn that could leave hundreds of thousands homeless. Section 8 recipients pay 30% of their income in rent, and the federal government picks up the rest to what is deemed a fair market price. Under the new proposal, high-cost rents in big cities like New York would be averaged together with cheaper rents in surrounding suburban areas.
Well, the Bush administration is really trying to undermine the entire Section 8 program and force people out on the streets as a way to save money to pay for the tax cuts to the rich and the war in Iraq.
Michael Caine, National Director of Mass Alliance of HUD Tenants, says the changes will be devastating for a third of the 1.9 million families who depend on Section 8.
They propose a cutback for next year of 250,000 families and 600,000 by 2009. That's in their actual budget proposals. You know, we believe that homeland security should begin with a home.
If the changes go through, Section 8 tenants in New York City would have to pay 14% more for a four-bedroom apartment, and residents fear landlords will quit participating in the program. The final publication of the rules will be October 1st.
Oregon's largest dairy has been hit with a gender bias lawsuit. Three women filed the suit against Columbia River Dairy, alleging that they were not hired because of their sex. The United Farm Workers Union is supporting the women in that lawsuit, which seeks back pay, an order prohibiting discrimination, attorney's fee, and unspecified damages. Only two of the 150 workers currently employed at the farm appear to be women. Earlier this year, the dairy paid $70,000 to workers after a suit was filed alleging minimum wage violations.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report. Good diet and exercise lengthen your life, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. A good diet and regular exercise increase longevity and reduce age-related health problems. Incidence of memory and attention loss, including Alzheimer's disease, can be reduced by walking as little as 2 to 3 hours per week. Researchers have also found a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and olive oil increases longevity. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
This is a big time for America. It's not just another election, not merely about a list of issues, even though some of those issues are huge, including the deliberate downsizing of our middle class and the deadly war of lies in Iraq. What's at stake on November 2nd is the very idea of America itself. The historic idea that we might actually build a society based on our egalitarian ideals of economic fairness, social justice, and equal opportunity for all. The moneyed elites, presently working through Bush, Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, and company, have decided that America should no longer bother pursuing egalitarianism. They are asserting a new ethic of privilege, declaring that the role of government is to take care of the good fortunes of the few and not worry about the well-being of the many. In their view, they're the top dogs and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants. Wielding their administrative blowtorches and legislative monkey wrenches, they're jerry-rigging America's rules so that money and power flow uphill, out of our neighborhoods, into their corporate suites and offshore bank accounts. They're seizing control of every decision that affects our lives, from wages to taxation, from what's in your dinner to what's in your daily news feed, from who goes to college to who goes to war. They're turning our America, our democracy, into their America of plutocracy and autocracy. As I travel around the country, I find that most people are aware that something fundamental has gone wrong, that this is not the America they thought they were born into. I recently saw an old pickup truck with a bumper sticker that asked, "Where are we going? And what am I doing in this handbasket?" People know that we're being led down some rabbit trail off of America's true path toward egalitarianism. This is Jim Hightower saying, I believe we're in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about. It's a big time for America. Time to take our country back.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend. Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, greetings, friends. Happy Monday, the beginning of the week. It's a beautiful day here in the People's Republic of Vermont. We arrived from Portland, Oregon, 2 hours ago. Missed our flight out yesterday, ended up on the 11:30 flight to Chicago, changed planes at 4:30 in the morning, got in. You don't want to know the whole... Anyhow, so if I sound somewhat less than coherent, please let's just chalk it up to the 6 cups of coffee here this morning. I think all is well, though. See, I'm already... It's going to be a great show. You'll recall that back on 9/11... A few days after 9/11, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson were sitting there on the 700 Club, as I recall, saying, you know, God lifted the veil and allowed this 9/11 attack to happen. I'm paraphrasing here. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it was very close to this. Because America tolerates homosexuality and America has become this decadent name. You know, and all this essentially bile and hate-filled justification that their God would want to kill 3,000 innocent people in order to send a message to Americans. Well, I got an email here. It's been going around quite a bit. I gave a talk in Portland yesterday, and a couple of people in the room had received it. And apparently it's not something that's just, you know, hey, look at this. You know, it's not totally unique. And in fact, in today's, I believe it was the USA Today. Yeah, looking at the typeface, it had to be USA Today. We clipped it out on the airplane on the way here. There's a there are these storm tracks that you can see where Ivan, Fran, Charlie, and now Jeannie came through Florida, and they had done one particular map where in the 2000 presidential election they colored all the counties in Florida blue, who voted for Gore, and pink, who voted for Bush. And what's really interesting is that Charlie came in through Charlotte County and Sarasota and DeSoto and Hardy and Polk, and then went up through Lake and Marion and Duval and Nassau, all pink counties. In other words, Charlie didn't hit a single Gore county. It just went right straight up the middle through the Bush counties. And then Fran came in through a county, I can't quite see the name of it because it's obscured, through Highlands, through Polk, then Citrus, then Levy, then Dixie, then it looks like Lafayette, and then Madison County, all, again, Bush counties. Now, that's not, and there were a fair number of Gore counties in Florida. And then Ivan comes in over here, and it comes right through, what is it, Walton or Waxton, and Holmes County, and Washington County, which were all Bush counties. And it actually looks like Fran went out of her way to avoid Orange and Osceola and Pasco counties, which were Gore counties. I mean, it's like looped right around them. And now we see that Ivan just came through, and Ivan pretty much followed the course of Fran. And as far as I can tell from looking at it, Ivan didn't hit any Bush counties either. So apparently four hurricanes in a row, every single one of them managed to hit almost all the counties that voted for Bush, and none of the counties that voted for Gore were hit by hurricanes. Now, those of you who live in Florida, I'm sure that you know more about this than me, and if you'd like to correct me and set me straight, I mean, I'm looking right here at the map in today's USA Today, and this email that I got, you know, in fact, the person who sent it said, "This is no longer an incident, interesting coincidence. It's an unmistakable message from God. I hope everyone's listening." Very interesting. Note, after leaving Florida, Charlie hit Georgia and Francis hit Georgia and South Carolina. Both also voted for Bush in 2000. Ivan is projected as of September 14th. Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana all voted for Bush. So maybe Falwell and Robertson got it right. They just, that God is punishing us. They just got the event wrong. You know, it's a... I don't know. It was too good to pass up. I just had to share it with you. Welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to North Carolina, broadcasting, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. We're so pleased to be on Sirius. And also streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, one of the finest internet radio stations on earth, radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. In memory of the original White Rose Society, those students who dared to stand up to Hitler and were thus eventually murdered in some truly horrific ways. And also we have archives on the TomHartman.com website that Mike Toth has been putting together. Many of them are a little out of date. We've got about 7 months' worth of archives that I haven't put up yet, and I am hoping to get to this weekend. So anyhow, if you'd like to drop into our chat room, the chat room is run by the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. If you go to TomHartman.com and click Live Chat, it will take you there. Already full of folks. Oh, interesting. Coach Glenn says, Ivan hit, reading the chat room here, Ivan hit at exactly the same latitude and longitude as another hurricane, the first time that's ever happened in history. Have you seen the September issue of National Geographic? This is incredible. When we were out in Portland, Oregon, we visited our youngest daughter who lives out there, and I was sitting on our coffee table, and I'm flipping through this thing, and the things that I was writing about in 1986 and 87... In the Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, a book I wrote about the end of oil and how we can respond to it, what we can do to make America energy independent, what we can do to change our way of thinking, change our stories, change our consciousness, and how this is a logical extension of a mindset that goes back before Christopher Columbus. In that book, I had laid out the statistics about what was going on with global warming, including charts and graphs and all kinds of, you know, pretty pictures. The current issue, the September 2004 issue of National Geographic magazine, did a brilliant job, of not just, you know, recapping what I'd written in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, because many, many writers have done that since then. I was, I think, probably one of the first to be talking about peak oil and M. King Hubbard and Colin Campbell, I believe. And all this sort of thing, you know, and back in 86, 87, predicting that within 6 or 7 years we would see wars, wars for oil in the Middle East, and sure enough, here we are. But just laying it out in excruciating detail, the fact that global warming, or what is now probably more appropriately called global climate change, is here. It is here courtesy of the fossil fuel industry. It is wreaking havoc on the planet. And one of the main side effects of it, well, not side effects, direct effects, one of the main direct effects of this increase in energy in the atmosphere, which is what global warming is, you know, heat is a form of energy. You get more energy in the atmosphere becomes more turbulent, is stronger hurricanes and more frequent hurricanes. And guess what, folks? I mean, isn't it amazing? All around the world, people are tuning on their evening news and they're seeing, well, you know, global warming is producing this, that, and the other, you know, the droughts in Sydney, the drying out of Central Australia. I mean, even in other countries, they'll talk about how global warming is melting the glaciers in the Rockies and in the western United States, and causing droughts in the far western United States, and changes in the weather all around the United. Here we don't talk about it. Why? Because you've got a half a dozen right wing crackpots who are well funded by these multi-billion-dollar foundations, who are well funded by the oil industries, who are taking advantage of the essential stupidity of so many people in the news media, who came into the news media not by the via the route of journalism, where you're taught, if you go to journalism school, that your job is not just to present both sides, but to be an honest broker for the truth. So if one side has two crackpots and the other side has 2,000 well-respected scientists, you ignore the crackpots. Or at the very most, you say, when you're all done, by the way, there's a couple crackpots who say, but they're affiliated with the oil company. But instead, you've got these infotainment folks out there, you know, pulling down their huge salaries from faux news. And, well, I shouldn't just pick on faux news. All the networks are doing this now that in the last 15, 20 years since Reagan, they've shut down their news divisions or separated. There used to be a firewall. I mean, when I started in news back in the early 1970s, in both television news and radio news, locally speaking, there was an absolute firewall. The news divisions were not operated as part of the entertainment division. They were operated as a community service. They were operated with a view of, you know, this is the obligation we have to democracy. There was a little encouragement from the government with the Fairness Doctrine and whatnot, saying, hey, if you're going to use the airwaves, you have an obligation to inform people. That's what they're there for. I mean, we started subsidizing public information in 1780. It was in the 1780s that they first passed a subsidy on the printing of newsprint, on the publishing of newspapers so that newspapers could be printed less expensively, and on the postal service providing a special postal rate for newspapers so that the populace could be well educated, because Jefferson and Madison and Franklin and even the conservatives of the day who didn't really believe in democracy, who thought that aristocracy was really a whole lot safer, can't have the rabble, John Adams and Alexander Hamilton, all of them agreed that we had to have an educated populace. And we still have that with newspapers. Newspapers can still mail at a discounted rate. It is still subsidized by your tax dollars and mine. But with regard to the airwaves, now they're saying, hey, we're here to make money. Screw the public interest. And so you've got these guys who are pulling down $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 salaries, $1 million salaries. I mean, what do you think John King has made? What do you think Dan Rather, not to pick on Dan Rather, any of these guys. In fact, Rather doesn't care. He's at the top of his career. The ones who are coming up, they are afraid to take on the White House. This is why you haven't heard a serious question from any reporter in the White House in 3 years, because they know one serious question and they're not invited back. And if they're not invited back, then their network has no use for them anymore and they've lost their job. George Bush has the ability to destroy the career of any journalist simply by refusing to talk to him. And that's why they're toadying up. And so you've got this situation where the real issues of the world, like global warming, are simply not being discussed. Except here!
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Hello, Mama, it's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying. Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan. I'm eating good, I'm praying.
And welcome back, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free telephone number. Our chat room is filling up. Boy, it's great. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of folks in here who are fairly regular. Coach Glenn in Tulsa and whatnot. But we have visitors today from 100 kilometers, what is it, north? South? Of Oslo, Norway. And we've got, also in the chat room is somebody from Tokyo, Japan. So if you'd like to drop in and have a conversation, find out what the rest of the world thinks of America and George W. and all our general insanity, just go to TomHartman.com and click on the chat room. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. If you have an AOL or CompuServe screen name and password, just plug them in and boom, you're in. And if not, you can fill out the form. All it requires is your email address, no credit card or anything. There's no cost or anything. And the email address is just so that, you know, if somebody gets in there and starts spamming commercial messages or, you know, insane obscenity or whatever, that they can be tracked or bounced out or whatever, you know. No big deal. So, anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone lines have been lit up here for a little bit. Let's go to them. Let's start with Kodak on the road. Hey, you must be listening on Sirius, Kodak. What's up?
Yes, I am listening on Sirius. I bet the weather is gorgeous in your area of the country.
It is absolutely marvelous, although I've only seen it for 2 hours.
I know the feeling oh too well.
Yeah.
I call in response to your topic about global warming. I have a delightful little story. About 20, 25 years ago, I used to go deep sea fishing 10 to 16 times a year, weather permitting.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 10 years of doing this, for the first time, I noticed, well, I got sunburned. And let me explain. I am a dark-skinned black man. I'm not blue-black, but I'm pretty dark. And for me to burn in this sun was an astounding event. And I worked outside predominantly a large portion of my life.
Yeah.
So no one after that could tell me there was no such thing as the planet getting hotter.
Yeah, or the UV getting more intense, actually. That
exactly.
would be what's doing it, the ozone layer thinning out.
And you ask anyone that works outside, and then for 7 years I did landscape contracting, irrigation, and lighting, and we would start at 5, and we would have to end the day by 1 or 2 here in North Carolina, where we have relatively mild summers in relation to other parts of the world.
Uh-huh.
My other comment is regarding the media and something I started to say the other day regarding how it being in tune to the world news, you don't really understand the effect that Fox News has on the populace. As I was relating on Friday, I was talking to this young lady who I respect and never would have guessed was a Republican, but in the past have voted Democratic. But after listening to her talk just for a second, it was obvious where she got her news. And it was predominantly from Fox. And she was astounded to know that there was another voice out there. But and even though she had this lopsided view, you can still appeal to the person's common sense about what they know about that particular subject on any given topic that they come up with.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible, Kodak. Louise and I were in the Portland airport for about 14 hours yesterday, and we were sitting in the United Airlines lounge thing, you know, whatever they call it, red carpet club, and the TV's on, and it's tuned to Fox TV.
Oh my goodness!
And it was on over the bar, you know, and I went over there to ask for something, and we won't get into that. And the guy is interviewing Colin Powell, and he says, do you think that John Kerry criticizing George Bush is putting our troops in harm's way? It's like, you know, planting the seed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the questions themselves. Kodak, I got to move on. Thanks for your comments. Always well said and pithy. Do appreciate it. Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The SEIU is preparing to join Hispanic leaders and pro-immigrant groups in protesting California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's veto of legislation that would have allowed illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. And supporters charge that a last-minute demand by Schwarzenegger to place a mark on licenses that would differentiate them from those held by legal residents and citizens would have encouraged discrimination if implemented. The Service Employees International Union has more than 30,000 members across California and has promised to assist the proponents of the legislation in boycotting and protesting at convention centers and hotels across the state.
New Bush administration rules could squeeze low-income tenants out of their homes. George Bush wants to alter the formula used to calculate an average rent price. The Mass Alliance of HUD tenants warn that could leave hundreds of thousands homeless. Section 8 recipients pay 30% of their income in rent, and the federal government picks up the rest to what is deemed a fair market price. Under the new proposal, high-cost rents in big cities like New York would be averaged together with cheaper rents in surrounding suburban areas.
Well, the Bush administration is really trying to undermine the entire Section 8 program and force people out on the streets as a way to save money to pay for the tax cuts to the rich and the war in Iraq.
Michael Caine, National Director of Mass Alliance of HUD Tenants, says the changes will be devastating for a third of the 1.9 million families who depend on Section 8.
They propose a cutback for next year of 250,000 families and 600,000 by 2009. That's in their actual budget proposals. You know, we believe that homeland security should begin with a home.
If the changes go through, Section 8 tenants in New York City would have to pay 14% more for a four-bedroom apartment, and residents fear landlords will quit participating in the program. The final publication of the rules will be October 1st.
Oregon's largest dairy has been hit with a gender bias lawsuit. Three women filed the suit against Columbia River Dairy, alleging that they were not hired because of their sex. The United Farm Workers Union is supporting the women in that lawsuit, which seeks back pay, an order prohibiting discrimination, attorney's fee, and unspecified damages. Only two of the 150 workers currently employed at the farm appear to be women. Earlier this year, the dairy paid $70,000 to workers after a suit was filed alleging minimum wage violations.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Good diet and exercise lengthen your life, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. A good diet and regular exercise increase longevity and reduce age-related health problems. Incidence of memory and attention loss, including Alzheimer's disease, can be reduced by walking as little as 2 to 3 hours per week. Researchers have also found a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and olive oil increases longevity. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Johnny Good, welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our Norwegian member in our chat room is... Are you kidding? The four hurricanes missed all the Gore counties? Well, I've got two maps here, and it sure does look like it. Go figure. Go figure. 1-866-889-8894. I've been out of the loop here. By the way, I want to thank Rama Schneider for doing the third hour of our program last Friday. I got a number of fan emails for Rama for the great job he was doing. He's in here today engineering the program, so if you call our number, you get to say hi to him, and you can express your thanks if you liked his program, or you can mutter to him if you didn't. 26 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go to Chris from New Mexico. Hey, Chris, what's on?
Hey, you're right, absolutely. Rama does a great job when you're not able to there to bat for him.
He does. He's a good man.
You probably already have this, and I only heard it fleetingly, and I've only heard it once, but NBC TV reported on the Today Show this morning that documents have been uncovered pointing to the Bush administration instructing the Central Intelligence Agency to influence through covert actions the Iraqi elections in favor of candidates that the administration, I guess, wants. It has to have legitimacy because the Bushies are denying it, and the Today Show had reaction from both Ted Kennedy and Nancy Pelosi, who were appropriately outraged at this. I just wanted to know if you had anything more on it.
You know, I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that, Chris. But let's pretend for just a moment that you and I are George Bush, as bizarre as it may sound. Let's say that you and I are in the position of President of the United States, and we have just inherited the mess that George Bush has created.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that if there was an absolutely free and fair election in Iraq, you're going to end up with a Taliban kind of state, or you may well. I mean, it may be a far worse situation than anything that we went in to fix. In fact, it may end up being worse than Afghanistan was. Don't you think that we should at least explore the possibility, since we munged this thing up, of doing something, whether it's covert action or whether it's taking control of the media or doing something to try and influence, at least to put a good face on it, a secular democracy, or to put a blatantly partisan kind of evil face on it, the kind of government that we would want? I mean, isn't that something that if you and I were running this country, we might think would be a good idea?
We might, but to be sure, when a nation like Iraq is ruled by not the people, but by military might, to have an election take place, all that's necessary is for the people in power to say that an election has taken place. I mean, after all, Saddam Hussein won his last election by, what, 99.8%?
Yeah.
Did that fool anybody? No. Chances are, of course, you're going to say the same thing, or much the same thing, in January, because Bush claims Alawi is legitimate. As long as Alawi is backed by American military might,
yeah,
doesn't make him legitimate.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I'm asking the question more rhetorically than anything else, because frankly, I think that we're going to have a damn near impossible time having this election be perceived as legitimate, no matter what. And one of the hugest mistakes that could have been made, I mean, absolutely hugest mistakes that could have been made, was for Bush to bring Alawi over to the United States and to have Alawi sit on his lap like a hand puppet. Bush moves his hand, Alawi moves his mouth, and the Bush campaign slogans come out of Alawi's mouth. And now Alawi's got to go back to Iraq and pretend like he's his own man, and nobody's going to believe it.
Most people understand that Alawi is an ex-CIA puppet. I mean, you know, much...
Not just ex-CIA, ex-Saddam. He was an executioner for Saddam, too. He was a double agent.
Yeah, and, I mean, there American presidents, you brought up Ngo Dinh Diem in Vietnam way back when, and there was the Shah of Iran that was given legitimacy by American presidents. Nobody that is independent... of any of this is claiming anything but that, but their puppetry, just like Karzai in Afghanistan.
And here's this, the New York Times, just a couple of quick headlines. June 9th, 2004. Ex-CIA aides say Iraqi leader, this Alawi, helped agency in the 90s attacks. And this is from the article. Dr. Alawi's group, the Iraqi National Accord, used car bombs and other explosive devices smuggled into Baghdad from northern Iraq, the officials said. The Sydney Morning Herald, Australia. Alawi shot inmates in cold blood, say witnesses. This is a story that got traction all over the world except in the United States.
Yeah.
The Guardian in the UK, this on September 16th of this year. Who sees Simona Tortella? Toretta? I think she's one of the Italian women who are held hostage. This Iraqi kidnapping has the mark of an under-police operation. The article states, witnesses said several attackers wore Iraqi National Guard uniforms and identified themselves as working for Ayed Alawi, the interim prime minister. The Independent in the UK, May 29, 2004. Exiled Alawi was responsible for 45-minute WMD claim. This was the claim that Tony Blair used to push the British Parliament over the edge, where he said Saddam has weapons and in 45 minutes he can attack the United Kingdom. Al Jazeera, The Guardian, here's a headline from August 9th of this year. Al Jazeera's closure, a blow to freedom. The article states the Iraqi prime minister's decision to throw Al Jazeera out of Baghdad and ban it from operating for 30 days, is a serious blow to press freedom, reporters sans frontières has said, you know, the French organization. And here the last one, Douglas Valentine, the author of the book The Phoenix Program. Alawi worked for Saddam, then for British Secret Services, then the CIA. The U.S. government clearly needs a strong man to do its bidding, someone who acts on self-interest and not in the interest of the Iraqi people he's supposed to represent. It looks like Alawi fits the bill quite well. So,
yeah, well,
you know, are we installing
Shah? I had heard that report today and this morning, and I just wanted to know if you knew anything more about it, or maybe could find out more about it, because that really does sound like a bombshell if the Bush administration can be proved to be attempting with the CIA to influence the so-called free elections in Iraq.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, Chris, I would be astounded if they weren't, number one. And frankly, in their shoes, I would think that they think that they're doing the best thing, that they have to produce the best outcome, and these people are absolute control freaks, this administration, and they really don't trust the people. I mean, this goes back to the John Adams, Thomas Jefferson argument, where Adams said you can't trust the rabble, you can't directly elect the Senate, you have to keep tight controls on things, and Jefferson said no, always trust the people, because the people will make mistakes, the people will then suffer from their own mistakes, the people will then correct their mistakes. If you trust the people 100% of the time, it may take a little longer, it may take a half a generation, even two generations, but it's a self-correcting mechanism, and you won't end up with 1,000 years of kings and popes and feudal lords like you had in Europe. And Adams wasn't buying it, and neither is George W. Bush. This is the conservative mindset, don't trust the people, versus the Jeffersonian so-called liberal mindset of you trust the people. And we know from 3 years now, these people do not trust the people. They're not listening to the people. The majority of the people in the United States did not want to invade Iraq. The majority of people in the United States want universal health care. The majority of the people in the United States want clean air. The majority of the people in the United States don't want mercury in their water. None of this is being done by the Bush administration because they don't trust the people. They are sucking up to the interests that keep them in power. And so it makes perfect sense that in another country, I mean, if they're doing this in the United States, it makes perfect sense that in another country that they have control over, they would go in and say, you know, we can't trust the people. We've got to make this come out the way that we think is best. And I got to say, Chris, in their defense, in their hearts of hearts, they probably really believe that this is the best thing because this is their worldview. You have to understand their worldview. Well, and, you know, I don't agree with it. I think it's twisted, distorted, and mentally ill, but this is their worldview.
Isn't it nauseating that America is being run by a group of people that are taking pages from the playbook of Mussolini?
To some extent, yeah. Yeah, nauseating isn't the right word. It is a crime against democracy. The playbooks of Mussolini that you're talking about, I'm sure, are Mussolini's idea that if you merge the power of corporations with the state, with the power of the state, you're going to end up with an institution that is unassailable.
That's his quote.
That fascism is the merger of state and corporate interests. It should more appropriately be called corporatism. Yeah, but, you know, in his defense, George W. wasn't the first to start this. I mean, Bill Clinton was doing this. Before him, George H.W. Bush was doing this. Before him, Ronald Reagan really pioneered this by ending the Sherman Act. The last president to enforce the Sherman Act in any small and meaningful way was Jimmy Carter, breaking up AT&T, which helped the stockholders of AT&T, which led to an explosion of innovation and competition, Lucian Technologies, all the baby bells and everything else. And really before that, you'd almost have to go back to Truman and Roosevelt to see anybody significantly enforcing the Sherman Act, although it was kept in place. I mean, you know, let's give him his due. Roosevelt and even Nixon, even Johnson, were to a large extent saying, you're not going to push beyond this. It was Ronald Reagan who dropped the curtain and said, okay, guys, have fun. And Michael Milken and all these guys, they made absolute billions pulling together these huge corporations and devastating competition in America, turning the diversity of the American landscape, where every city had its own unique character, into one giant homogenous Burger King. And the result is that entrepreneurs can't succeed. America has been raped. You've got the largest employer is now Walmart. The common wage has dropped from a living wage down to a poverty wage, and that's conservative economics, cheap labor conservative economics at its best, at its core. And thanks, Chris, for getting me started on that rant. I appreciate it. Good
Take
to hear,
care, Tom.
Good
to hear have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Do good. 16 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Let's go to Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you again. I got two questions. One is, I heard this a little while ago, and I heard it again when Elizabeth Edwards was in town, that Rush Limbaugh is on the United Forces radio network, and that just, I would love to hear somehow how we could get you on to give some opposing view other than that clown.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of that.
Do you have any suggestions on how we go about that? Write our congressman? Do what? I mean,
write to your congressman or your senator. Armed Forces Radio, I believe, is administered by the Pentagon. I could be wrong. It might be a part of the U.S. Agency for International Development or something like that. I'd have to look into it. I know that they say that they're balanced because they're carrying Jim Hightower's minutes. Our web listeners hear the Hightower minutes. I don't think that our station affiliates hear them. We run them along with the news at the top of the hour. And many stations insert their own newscasts. But Jim Hightower's on for 2 minutes a day, and they've got Rush Limbaugh on for 1 hour. They only run the first hour of his program. But nonetheless, he's the only commentator on there, and I agree there should be something else. If not me, there's a number of good liberal talk show hosts out there, good and middle-of-the-road commentators, and I consider myself somewhere between liberal and middle-of-the-road, and even conservative on some issues, frankly. I think we should have a balanced budget. That used to mean conservative. There needs to be balance, and the group that puts pressure on whoever it is who's running Armed Forces Radio. And as I said, frankly, I don't have it in front of me. I know that one of our affiliate guys had contact with them and sent them a demo of the show and said, hey, you ought to think about this. But the way that kind of pressure happens is politically, frankly. That's how it works. So, yeah, not wanting to advocate for getting my own show out there, and yet, you know, some sort of balance. Feel free to mention me, but I think even more important than necessarily the Tom Hartman show, which, you know, I have a fondness for, but I know I'm not the only game in town. Somebody should be out there balancing Rush Limbaugh on Armed Forces Radio. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I agree.
And you had a second point, Mark.
Yeah, the other thing, I made the mistake after watching Whose Line Is It to continue on into the 700 Club, and I heard Pat Robertson directly endorsing the President of the United States, saying that how bad this country would have been if Gore would have won, and he's calling on everybody for a 40-day prayer and fast to keep George Bush in the White House. How can he do that and maintain his tax-exempt status? That's just beyond me.
Well, it's clearly a violation of the law if it is as you described. However, the law is enforced by the administration, and this administration is not enforcing those kind of laws. I mean, that's to a large extent, in my experience, what it boils down to. In fact, if anything, they're doing the reverse now. The Republican Party last week admitted that in two counties or two states in the United States, they mailed out brochures to people saying that if liberals are elected, their first step will be to ban the Bible. One of the basic tenets of liberalism is let people have full exposure to everything. I mean, it's the conservatives. It was the conservative Nazis who burned books. I mean, it's the conservatives who want to ban books that talk about evolution. It's the conservatives who want to ban books that talk about birth control. It's the conservatives who are into banning books. And here the Republican National Committee is sending out letters to swing voters and Republican voters and Christians in two states saying if liberals are elected they're going to ban the Bible. I mean, this goes beyond absurd. This is obscene.
I agree.
This is obscene, and these people should be losing their tax exemptions. And let's hope we get an administration that says, "Hey, we are all in favor of religion. We are all in favor of people having a church to go to. We're all in favor of prayer. If kids want to pray in school, they have that right, contrary to what the right wingers will tell you. Who doesn't have the right is the teacher to tell the children what prayer to say." And I don't think any of us want that. And I don't think any of us want some moony teacher or some, you know, wacky cult teacher to decide that he's going to decide, you know, what prayer people have to say. But in any case, the people have the right of religion. And stop this funding of religion. You know, over a million Bible tracts went into Iraq right after our invasion. This Franklin Graham and his activities and his ilk. I mean, this is scary stuff. It's not healthy. For democracy.
Very scary. Amen, brother.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for the call. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When it came time to bilk California out of billions in energy costs, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When George Bush's campaign needed hundreds of thousands of bundle dollars, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When Dick Cheney needed help crafting energy policy that was friendlier to corporations, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." And when someone had to keep small Enron investors calm so the big guys could bail out before the stock collapsed, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." He pioneered new ways to create profits, and now he has to wear an orange jumpsuit and languish in a cell without room service. We can only hope that there's a squash court at that minimum security prison. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the billionaire!
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to win.
This is a Win feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. The PBGC was created in 1974 to ensure protected or defined benefit plans, which are a dying breed because workers receive a guaranteed amount of money regardless of their company's investment performance. Most workers are now offered 401k plans, which are not insured and based on the whims of the stock market. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
U.S. Airways announced on Sunday it was returning to bankruptcy for the second time after having already terminated the pilot's pension plan. And now it's revealed intentions to terminate the pensions for all of its other labor union employees.
There's a limit on how much is guaranteed. One of the limitations is that no more than, I think, $44,000 a year of pension will be guaranteed. And there are people in these unions that will earn pensions greater than that. The amount in excess of that limit, they will not receive.
In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
There needs to be a different balance, either less risk being taken on or more premiums to offset that risk. And it was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were. And stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks. And it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments. And if they can't pay out, the burden falls on the PBGC and ultimately the U.S. taxpayer. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Promise, promise, moonlight's fading, wanna make life late.
Somebody say, somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say, somebody cry.
And welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour. Let's take a couple quick calls. 1-866-889-8894. Tony in Washington, D.C. been patiently waiting. Hey, Tony, what's up?
How you doing?
Enjoy, great.
Enjoyed your remote broadcast. It was very enlightening.
Oh, thank you.
Last week. This is very quick. I think Kerry, when he does his debate, he's saying not only have we had flip-flop, but he has flim-flammed this nation.
You mean George Bush has?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, if you want to use the label on Kerry, I think Kerry and his campaign should use the label flim-flam.
Uh-huh. So the first time George Bush says flip-flop, Kerry should say flim-flam.
Absolutely.
That's a good one. That's
Take
a good
care
one.
Now.
That's a good one. Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Billy in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Good to talk to you, Tom.
Ditto.
I don't know if this has been talked about on your show or not yet, but what do you think about last week, gold going up, shooting up to $487 an ounce?
Wait a second. Gold went to $487 an ounce?
I'm pretty sure that's what I saw in the paper.
Boy, I completely missed that. I know it had been floating around, you know, between 400 and 408. You know, the fact that it's gone from roughly 300, 298, a year and a half ago or so, up to 400, and now oil is, you know, $40 a gallon, or a barrel, rather, and the dollar has dropped against the euro by about a third. All of those things mean is not that gold is getting more expensive, oil is getting more expensive, and the euro is getting more expensive. What it means is that George Bush has been ruining the value of the dollar. The dollar is becoming weaker. It's becoming worth less. And we're seeing it in our declining standard of living, and we will see it in our declining standard of living around the world. And the reason they're doing it, of course, is because you borrow money and then you pay it off with dollars that are worth less. Germany did it in the 20s, you know, to satisfy the obligations of the Treaty of Versailles. We're not doing it as drastically as they did, but the outcome, the consequences, could be just as dangerous. So
that was a misprint, if I was seeing things or what.
Yeah, well, I'll take a look for that. I'll take a look for that, Billy, because if gold is at 487, that's a huge story. Because that, yeah, I mean, that means something really, 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 really spooky is going on. And, you know, frankly, with all the traveling and everything I've been doing the last week, I haven't been keeping track of the financial pages quite that tightly. I'm not a big gold nut. I just notice it as an indicator of the broad trends in society. Billy, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Your Light. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. You're here in the No Boring Zone.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The SEIU is preparing to join Hispanic leaders and pro-immigrant groups in protesting California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's veto of legislation that would have allowed illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. And supporters charge that a last-minute demand by Schwarzenegger to place a mark on licenses that would differentiate them from those held by legal residents and citizens would have encouraged discrimination if implemented. The Service Employees International Union has more than 30,000 members across California and has promised to assist the proponents of the legislation in boycotting and protesting at convention centers and hotels across the state.
New Bush administration rules could squeeze low-income tenants out of their homes. George Bush wants to alter the formula used to calculate an average rent price. The Mass Alliance of HUD tenants warn that could leave hundreds of thousands homeless. Section 8 recipients pay 30% of their income in rent, and the federal government picks up the rest to what is deemed a fair market price. Under the new proposal, high-cost rents in big cities like New York would be averaged together with cheaper rents in surrounding suburban areas.
Well, the Bush administration is really trying to undermine the entire Section 8 program and force people out on the streets as a way to save money to pay for the tax cuts to the rich and the war in Iraq.
Michael Caine, National Director of Mass Alliance of HUD Tenants, says the changes will be devastating for a third of the 1.9 million families who depend on Section 8.
They propose a cutback for next year of 250,000 families and 600,000 by 2009. That's in their actual budget proposals. You know, we believe that homeland security should begin with a home.
If the changes go through, Section 8 tenants in New York City would have to pay 14% more for a four-bedroom apartment, and residents fear landlords will quit participating in the program. The final publication of the rules will be October 1st.
Oregon's largest dairy has been hit with a gender-biased lawsuit. Three women filed the suit against Columbia River Dairy, alleging that they were not hired because of their sex. The United Farm Workers Union is supporting the women in that lawsuit, which seeks back pay, an order prohibiting discrimination, attorney's fee, and unspecified damages. Only two of the 150 workers currently employed at the farm appear to be women. Earlier this year, the dairy paid $70,000 to workers after a suit was filed alleging minimum wage violations.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Good diet and exercise lengthen your life, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. A good diet and regular exercise increase longevity and reduce age-related health problems. Incidence of memory and attention loss, including Alzheimer's disease, can be reduced by walking as little as 2 to 3 hours per week. Researchers have also found a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and olive oil increases longevity. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
MoveOn Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Poor Richard. Richard Pearl is a right-wing neocon theorist who wants to be taken seriously as both a governmental and corporate insider. But he keeps taking highly public pratfalls that would be absolutely comical if they weren't so ugly. Pearl, who's tight with Dick Cheney and Donnie Rumsfeld, was one of the main architects of George W.'s disastrous policies in Iraq. He was the chief proponent of the fanciful notion that our invading troops would be greeted by grateful people tossing rose petals at them. Instead, angry Iraqis are tossing bombs, and more than 1,000 of our troops are dead. Richard is not doing any better in the corporate world. His latest pratfall is as a board member of Hollinger International, a media conglomerate that owns such papers as the Chicago Sun-Times and Jerusalem Post. The head honcho of Hollinger, Lord Conrad Black, now stands accused of having looted some $400 million from the corporation. Pearl was not merely on the board, but on the executive committee, with a direct fiduciary responsibility to protect the interests of the shareholders. But this supposed watchdog was Lord Black's lapdog. Pearl admits that he personally rubber-stamped stacks of financial documents involving Black's looting, signing the papers without even reading them. One reason that Pearl was so head-in-the-sand irresponsible is that he was enjoying the corporate gravy, too. In a sweetheart deal, he directed a Hollinger division that let him pocket $3 million, even though this division lost $49 million on Pearl's watch. But Richard now claims that he's a victim. After Lord Black's corporate kleptocracy was exposed, and after an internal report nailed Pearl for his flagrant abdication of duty, Richard loudly proclaimed to the media that he had been duped by his former friend and benefactor. This is Jim Hightower saying, poor Richard. I guess he was duped into putting those millions into his own pockets, too.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 36 days to regime change. 477 days since a traitor in the White House outed Valerie Plame, Joe Wilson's wife. What did George Bush have to say about a traitor in his own administration?
Well, I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, This is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
No idea whatsoever. 690 days since the beginning of the search for weapons of mass destruction. 711 days since the anthrax killer struck, guaranteeing the passage of the Patriot Act. 1120 days since 9/11. And on time moves. You know, back in the 19th century, as the gold rush was going on out in the West Coast, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, about a third of the people in this state actually left to go out west. It was remarkable, and between 1840 and 1880. And there was a lot of get-rich-quick scheming going on. Get-rich-quick schemes are nothing new. And people taking advantage of others' basic and fundamental needs to live. You know, I mean, from company stores to predatory lending, none of this stuff is new. And it seems that whenever economic times get tough, whenever conservative economics is at an ascendancy, and the middle class is caught in a squeeze, then out come the sharks. And speaking of the sharks today, I'm very pleased to have with us Richard Lord, who's the author of a new book, American Nightmare, Predatory Lending, and the Foreclosure of the American Dream. Richard, welcome to the program.
Tom, thanks very much for having me.
Glad to have you here. Richard, let's define terms first of all. What's predatory lending?
Well, if you ask the Department of Housing and Urban Development or other agencies that are supposed to regulate lending, they define it in a couple of ways as people getting unfair loans that are packed with fees and unnecessary insurance, or with a big, huge balloon payment at the end of the loan, or people getting loans based on forgery or falsifying of their income or their appraisal. But I kind of define it differently than they do. I say that any loan that is granted that the borrower can't reasonably be expected to repay, and that's tied to their house or their car or something else that they absolutely need to survive, that by nature is predatory because they're setting people up for failure.
Well, given the insecurity of the job market today, doesn't that represent about 85% of all mortgage holders?
Well, more and more, that's for sure. It used to be that the lending market was dominated by the prime lenders, the banks, you know, making reasonably good loans at reasonably good rates and with heavy regulation and good competition. But since about 1994, we've had this ever-growing subprime lending sector. In 1994, that sector made about $35 billion in loans, but last year it made $332 billion in loans, tenfold growth in just 10 years. And that industry is systematically roping people into loans they can't afford, in many cases at unfair terms.
Yeah, I think most Americans are unfamiliar with the history of credit in the United States. Up until the 1920s and 1930s, it was pretty much considered, it just wasn't, by and large, it wasn't done to borrow money to buy a home. People saved and saved and saved and then, you know, bought their house or they moved up slowly from house to house. And it was RCA Corporation in the 1920s. One of the things that fueled the Roaring Twenties, in fact, RCA Corporation, when radio came along, that first started offering time payments on radios and began this incredible credit boom and people going into credit. And it became fashionable to go into debt, whereas prior to that, it had always been considered a sign of impending doom, of moral failure. And then at some point in the 40s or 50s, the laws were changed to allow for deductions, income tax deductions for mortgage interest. Do you know the year that happened?
Well, I don't know the year that happened, but in 1986, the law was changed so that mortgage interest was the only kind of deductible interest, and that drove a lot of this increase in subprime lending that we're seeing, too.
Yeah. So now we've got a situation where the generation that remembered that you buy your house and you have it paid off, and that's your one security, that's your one safety thing, is dead, by and large, or dying. And the generation that's coming up views mortgage payments as essentially rent payments with tax benefits. And as interest rates go up, of course, monthly payments go up, which drives down the value of houses, which is threatening to explode this housing bubble. We were out in Oregon I arrived at 9 o'clock this morning. We were on the red eye flying all night. We were in Oregon for the last 3 or 4 days, and the folks we were staying with were pointing out to us that homes in their neighborhood had gone up as much as 50% in value in the last 3 years. I mean, there's talk about a bubble. And this is happening all over the United States, and setting to crash. And you juxtapose that with people who are speculating or who are desperate and are taking these kinds of loans. Are you of the opinion, as many analysts, particularly in the mortgage area, are, that the United States is facing a mortgage bubble, and that when it bursts, it may well make the stock market bubble crash look like a picnic?
I'm certainly of the opinion that we're headed for a foreclosure explosion that'll make what we saw in 2002 look pretty silly. And one of the reasons is, as you mentioned, that housing in many markets has been overvalued. But there's another one that I discuss in the book, and that's that during the huge mortgage boom of 2002 and 2003, you not only saw record numbers of mortgages being written, but you also saw record numbers of variable rate mortgages being written,
right,
particularly in the subprime area. And as you know, back in the day when interest rates were high, you got a variable rate mortgage so that your rate would go down when interest rates went back down.
Right.
But what happened in 2002, 2003 was people took variable rate mortgages when rates were as low as they'd ever been. And you're going to see those rates start skyrocketing late this year probably, and definitely next year. That's when millions and millions of variable rate mortgages are due to bump up by about 2 percentage points, which means maybe $150-$200 a month in payments.
Yeah, my recollection, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're the expert on this, is that roughly 3-4 years ago, variable rate mortgages represented somewhere less than 20% of the total market, 18-20%, something, and now they're over 35% of the market.
Yeah, they're 35 now, which is the highest it's been in 10 years. And
yeah.
Rates were low, were high 10 years ago. It made sense to do an ARM, but now it doesn't.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these people, I mean, I remember this happening in the 70s, where home interest rates, mortgage rates, we bought a home in the 70s at 13% interest, and we thought we got a good deal. And I remember them going as high as 16, 17, 18% in some areas. Do you see that coming, and if so, on what kind of timeline?
It's coming soon. I was just looking at loans by AmeriQuest Mortgage a few days ago, and what I saw was all these mortgages were made at around, 10, 9%. These were subprime loans. So these folks got what was a high interest rate even
Let's define subprime before you go any further.
Subprime means you probably wouldn't qualify for a bank loan. Either your credit rating isn't good enough, your income's not quite stable enough, or you're looking to borrow more than 80% of the property value. So the bank's not going to do it.
Right.
So these folks went into AmeriQuest, and they got loans for, 9 or 10%. But I don't know how many of them knew that these loans are going to go up by 6 percentage points eventually, or they can. They can reach 15, 16, 17, sometimes 18%.
Right, which on a loan where the monthly payment is, say, $800 a month, which is, probably more or less in the range of average for the American middle class.
If your interest rate jumps by about 2 percentage points, which is typical on the first jump, you're going to look at 800 becoming 1,000.
Just 2% from 800 to 1,000? Because you would think
2%
would be $32,
yeah,
right?
That's what you're going to see.
Because,
a lot of people,
because it's 2% for the total loan, not 2% for the monthly payment.
The interest rate goes up 2%, right, but the effect that has on the monthly payment is much more dramatic than a 2 percentage point jump.
It's like a 20% jump.
Yeah, it can be, yes.
Do you know of any studies that have been done about whether, to what extent Americans get this, those who aren't old enough to have lived through the 70s and see this happen before?
I do know that other industry analysts like SMR Research have said that this is just a disaster waiting to happen, that the bankruptcy crisis we're seeing today as a result of these adjustable rate loans going up is just going to be overshadowed by what we see in the upcoming years. 2005, 2006 could be very busy years in bankruptcy court and in the sheriff's sale rooms.
Well, it's already starting to happen, isn't it?
The foreclosure rates right now are lower than they were in 2002. That's when they were at a record level. At that point, 1.5% of all mortgages were in foreclosure.
Now that was because of joblessness, right?
Well, I would, in answer to that, I would point to my own county. In Allegheny County, which includes Pittsburgh, we had about 1,100 foreclosure filings in 1995. In 2003, we had 4,100, nearly a four-fold increase.
Wow.
And I looked at that year by year and said, what explains this? Do the economic ups and downs explain it? Do increases in refinances explain it? Nothing explained it except the growth of subprime lending. And you're seeing that in study after study in Los Angeles, Boston, Chicago, you name it. That's what they're seeing. High-interest lenders come in, foreclosures go through the roof.
Because people can't afford them. Ultimately,
right.
because they've been hustled. There's a lot of sales pressure. It's not. I mean, you go into your bank and they're looking at you like skeptically, like, you know, come on, prove to us that. Whereas you go to one of these subprime lenders and they're like, hey, we're going to make this happen for you. You know, because they're working on a commission and they're it's like condo sellers.
I call it the predatory lending food chain. It starts with the home improvement contractor who knocks on the door, and obviously he has an incentive to boost the bill he's going to charge you. Then he hooks you up with a mortgage broker. That guy gets paid on a percentage basis, percentage of your loan. He has an incentive to boost the amount you borrow.
There you go.
The lender you're going with, they no longer are going to sit around and wait for you to make payments for 30 years. They're going to turn around and sell that mortgage on Wall Street, and the more they get you to borrow, the more they can sell it for. Along the line, the incentive is to boost the amount of debt no matter what you can really afford.
All the way down. We're talking to Richard Lord, author of American Nightmare. Richard, we've got a little less than a minute left. I've been for a year and a half now recommending people to lock in their loans at fixed rates and get rid of adjustable rate mortgages. A, do you agree with that? And B, any additional advice in 30 seconds here?
Fixed rate definitely makes sense. I'd say if you're going to go out looking for a loan, ask three questions. One of them is, do I really need all of this money? Don't borrow more than you need. The other one is, do I need it now, or can I wait a little bit and improve my credit rating? And number three is, who's representing me in this deal? Because the broker sure as heck isn't, and the lender sure as heck isn't. So get somebody on your side. And I have a lot of questions you can ask in the back of American Nightmare.
Okay, great. And you can find the answers to these in the book, American Nightmare, Predatory Lending and the Foreclosure of the American Dream, a marvelous new book by Richard Lord. Richard, real quick, a website?
www.commoncouragepress.com is where the book's listed.
Great. Thank you very much, Richard Lord. I appreciate you being with us today. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Orrick name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Orrick XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Orrick bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Or it cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Orrick XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Don't you know that talking about a revolution sounds peaceful? Don't you know?
And welcome back.
Talking about a revolution sounds.
Yeah, revolutions take a lot of forms. You know, it's interesting. We were having a discussion in Portland last week about how about every 80 years in the United States is a revolution. And, of course, the Revolution of 1776, 80 years later, the Civil War. Those were pretty messy ones. And but I would say that the 1930s was a revolution, every bit as much a revolution as the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, Franklin Roosevelt and his reforms. And it's my hope, I may be wrong, I may be proven wrong on this, but it's my hope that if John Kerry is elected president, he can bring about a revolution like Franklin Roosevelt did, a true return to the foundation, egalitarian principles, that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link, that we need a society based on fairness, that we need a society where everybody has an opportunity to become everything they can be in this nation, where it's not just the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and Darwinian, hey, tough luck. You weren't born into a rich family. Forget about a good school. Forget about health care. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, the whole con routine, that that more can be done to that. By the way, just as a quick announcement, tonight in Burlington, Vermont, at the Barnes & Noble store, I will be signing What Would Jefferson Do?, my new book, and giving a talk about it and reading from it. I know we have some listeners here in Vermont, so if you'd like to drop in. In fact, in the last two talks that I've given in Grand Rapids, Michigan, actually the last three, Grand Rapids, Portland, Oregon, and Santa Fe, we've all had people from our chat room drop in. So I'm not sure if there's anybody in the chat room from Vermont, but if you are, boy, would that be a hoot. And so just a tip there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Richard in Durham, North Carolina, is on the line about how to successfully challenge corporate personhood. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, that's the first part of my question. The second part is related. What was the name of the case that's always cited when they say that a corporation's main function is to maximize profit, and even if the stockholders or the CEO wanted to do something different, that they can't because of that ruling?
I don't remember.
Okay.
There has been a Supreme Court ruling. In fact, there have been a number of rulings by a whole variety of courts over the last 40, 50 years broadly, saying that if an officer of a corporation, if a director of a corporation behaves in a way that doesn't enhance stockholder value, that they have, quote, failed at their fiduciary responsibility, and therefore can be evicted and can even actually even be prosecuted, although that very rarely happens. You know, the legal imperative, if you run a corporation, is that you have to do things that increase profits. And that's what people don't get about corporate altruism, you know, corporations sponsoring everything from little league teams to stadiums to, you know, clean up the highway, whatever, advertising, you know, on NPR and whatnot, is that they have to be able to demonstrate within some reasonable, you know, not necessarily dollar for dollar, but within some reasonable boundaries, that that money is spent in a way that increases their profits. They're not doing it. I mean, there are a few corporations that actually give away a small percentage of their income to charities. Ben and Jerry's used to do that, for example. But they don't trumpet it. They don't spend money to advertise it. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that a corporation's first job is to make money. It didn't used to be that way, oddly enough. Up through the 1880s, 1890s, corporation's first job was to serve the public good. Second job was to make money. Now that's been by and large reversed. But I frankly don't remember the Supreme Court case on that. I'm sorry.
Okay, so what kind of case do you think could be the foothold that gets us in the door to challenge corporate personhood or that paradigm?
Well, I was hoping the Nike versus Caskey might take a shot at it. Didn't work out that way. The reality, Richard, is that whether it's the women's suffrage movement, the abolition movement, the anti-slavery movement, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement in Vietnam, that all of these movements and dozens of others throughout the history of the United States, direct election of the Senate and so on, all of these happened not as a result of some specific piece of legislation. Ultimately, that was the result. They happened as a result of a lot of people waking up, and that's the work we need to do. Richard, thanks for the call.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The SEIU is preparing to join Hispanic leaders and pro-immigrant groups in protesting California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's veto of legislation that would have allowed illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. And supporters charge that a last-minute demand by Schwarzenegger to place a mark on licenses that would differentiate them from those held by legal residents and citizens would have encouraged discrimination if implemented. The Service Employees International Union has more than 30,000 members across California, and has promised to assist the proponents of the legislation in boycotting and protesting at convention centers and hotels across the state.
New Bush administration rules could squeeze low-income tenants out of their homes. George Bush wants to alter the formula used to calculate an average rent price. The Mass Alliance of HUD tenants warn that could leave hundreds of thousands homeless. Section 8 recipients pay 30% of their income in rent, and the federal government picks up the rest to what is deemed a fair market price. Under the new proposal, high-cost rents in big cities like New York would be averaged together with cheaper rents in surrounding suburban areas.
Well, the Bush administration is really trying to undermine the entire Section 8 program and force people out on the streets as a way to save money to pay for the tax cuts to the rich and the war in Iraq.
Michael Caine, National Director of Mass Alliance of HUD Tenants, says the changes will be devastating for a third of the 1.9 million families who depend on Section 8.
They propose a cutback for next year of 250,000 families and 600,000 by 2009. That's in their actual budget proposals. you know, we believe that homeland security should begin with a home.
If the changes go through, Section 8 tenants in New York City would have to pay 14% more for a four-bedroom apartment, and residents fear landlords will quit participating in the program. The final publication of the rules will be October 1st.
Oregon's largest dairy has been hit with a gender bias lawsuit. Three women filed the suit against Columbia River Dairy, alleging that they were not hired because of their sex. The United Farm Workers Union is supporting the women in that lawsuit, which seeks back pay, an order prohibiting discrimination, attorney's fee, and unspecified damages. Only two of the 150 workers currently employed at the farm appear to be women. Earlier this year, the dairy paid $70,000 to workers after a suit was filed alleging minimum wage violations.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Good diet and exercise lengthen your life, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. A good diet and regular exercise increase longevity and reduce age-related health problems. Incidence of memory and attention loss, including Alzheimer's disease, can be reduced by walking as little as 2 to 3 hours per week. Researchers have also found a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and olive oil increases longevity. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
I'll always remember you, like a child.
Yeah, what is it? Yusuf Israel? Islam is his name now. The great terrorist deported from the United States last year, or last week. I do have to say, I was, when Cat Stevens agreed with the Ayatollah that Salman Rushdie should be put to death for writing the Satanic Verses, which I have a copy of. It's pretty turgid prose. I couldn't read the whole thing, but I read a good chunk of it, and it didn't seem to me blasphemous at all. It was just a novel, but I thought this guy's gone over the edge, but a terrorist? I mean, you know, who knows? Six? Aha! Victoria Jones! Hey, thank you, Rama. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, by the way. It is the bottom of the second hour of our program, and time for Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service with our update from what's happening in the world of politics and news on the East Coast, in particular Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. You know, have you noticed how Cat Stevens hasn't made a single decent record since he changed his name?
I think he stopped playing music. You know, in Islam, the only kind of music that is, at least in the conservative sects of Islam, just like the Free Methodists, you know, the conservative sects of Christianity, the only kind of music that is allowed is sacred music.
Right. So, I mean, I think he's supposedly a moderate. I just think it's disappointing when someone with a talent stops it. However, that's not what they're talking about here in Washington today.
Yeah.
That was last week they were talking about that, although I've noticed that the rest of the country is still very interested in that.
Yeah.
Washington has moved to its obsession with itself.
Of course.
Of course.
Surprise, surprise.
Of course. Which this week takes the form of Thursday night's must-see TV, which you must see simply because all the other decent shows have been preempted, and that, of course, is the Thursday night debate.
Yes.
And how the candidates are going to do, what the negotiations have got for both sides, these incredibly intricate negotiations as to who stands where and how high the podiums are and all this kind of stuff. Both sides spinning like tops, trying to convince everybody that the other side's a better debater. And really, Kerry having a difficult task to show us in really one debate why those who haven't made up their minds and don't know much about him should go with him,
yeah.
Bearing in mind that depending how exciting this debate is, a lot less people are likely to watch the one next week, which is on a Friday night.
Yeah, and I didn't hear this description on NPR, but a friend of mine said they were listening to NPR over the weekend, and they heard the description that this thing is so scripted and so tight and so tightly controlled that it's sort of like going to the frontier land in Disney World and saying you've seen the Wild West.
I think it will be. I think, though, that with 90 minutes and with these two men not liking each other, even though they're not allowed to address each other, I think it's inevitable that we're going to see some reality. I think we just have to.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so, and let's hope that it works to the benefit of John Kerry. There's a lot riding on this. We can't get around that. There's a lot riding on this.
There's a lot riding on this, and this really is the big story in Washington this week. I mean, obviously the two candidates are practicing. The Bush team, you know, started preparing for these debates back during the Democratic primaries, as they were watching how the various candidates debated to get a sense. You know, I mean, they've been on this for a very, very long time. President Bush is memorizing phrases that Kerry uses and things that he does with cassettes while he's working out. So this is a man who will be incredibly well prepared.
Yeah.
Now we know that Kerry's preparing as well. He's in Wisconsin with his team. What preparations? I don't know what they're doing, but I think we can be sure that Karl Rove will leave almost nothing to chance. But then, of course, there is always, as we know, the chance factor, the nuance, the smile, the something that could work in one or the other's advantage, which is great in a way, but really a shame when we'd like to hear about the issues, but we know that finally it could well be a soundbite.
Or it could be the press deciding that the fact that somebody looks at their watch or somebody's size is more important than the issues.
And I think that will be a big part of it. I mean, I think there will be a few sound bites, very few, and certainly things like that. I mean, Kerry apparently sweats on his upper lip, and he wanted the temperature at 70 degrees. The Bush people got it warmer than that. And so, you know, if he starts sweating, well, we'll see him sweating. That's not going to look good. I mean, so it's fascinating how absurd. These should be just on radio, you know, really.
Yeah, it killed Nixon. I mean, it's I don't disagree that they should be on television. I think that there should be no rules. I think that we should get these two guys in a room and put TV cameras on them and just let them go at it. Just, you know, these two guys, let them go at it. And if you have to have a moderator who is someone who doesn't let people get away with BS, you know, a somewhat less political baggage version of Chris Matthews.
Yeah, it's so interesting. There's almost nobody in our country who is like that and who is prepared to just keep hammering away at people. They're all so afraid of losing access losing whatever it is they're afraid of losing.
I'd do it.
You know? Oh, you'd be great.
Do it.
They're partisan too.
Yeah, and they could. Well, but see, yeah, and I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. But they, I mean, they could get somebody like Michael Harrison, the publisher of Talkers Magazine,
sure.
who you know is an old radio guy. He understands how debates work. He's an excellent. He's probably one of the best moderators I have ever encountered in my whole entire life. But you know, instead, you know, as we know, it's going to be a well scripted performance rather than a debate, or even a high school debate coach. I mean, you know, get a good high school debate coach and do it by the classic rules of debate, you know, where you have a premise and then you make your argument for the premise and then you have the counter argument and then you have the counter count and let's do real debate. But
yeah,
you know, it ain't
so
gonna happen.
Never gonna happen.
Ain't gonna happen. No. This is just an extension of the Dog and Pony Show. Which is the tragedy of American politics to a large extent today. And, you know, hopefully we can, I mean, you look back at the Lincoln-Douglas debates, and these guys really debated, and they went off on digressions, you know, on tangents, and they reacted to the tangents, and they made notes about what each other said. I mean, you know, Lincoln-Douglas debate went on for, what, 4 hours, I think, six
yeah.
hours? I mean, it was a long, long thing. And people stood there and listened. And but anyway, I'm ranting. Okay, so we've got the debates. That's the hot topic. What else is going on in Washington?
Well, it's the fiscal new year on Friday, so Happy New Year.
Yes.
Which is causing
on multiple
not
levels.
Much conversation, really, mostly because Congress has got all these appropriation bills that it hasn't passed. It doesn't really want to draw too much attention to the fact that it's the only one it's passed so far, I believe, is on defense. It hasn't even passed one on Homeland Security.
Yeah.
And it needs to get something done before it goes home so that it can say to its electorate, seeing as it would rather campaign than make law, gosh, look, this is what we've done. However, at the same time, they're trying to write legislation jumping off the 9/11 Commission report. So it's going to be difficult for them to do all of this because they also need to go home and say, look, we did this about the 9/11 Commission report.
Aren't we going to hit the debt ceiling sometime in the next few weeks?
I would think so, yes.
I mean,
I get confused when we start talking real numbers, but yes, I believe we are.
Yeah, and that's going to require an act of Congress. And my sense of it was that was going to happen sometime in the first week of October. They'll probably bury it on a Friday afternoon like they usually do. But that, you know, well, again, most Americans don't realize the significance of that. So
that's the thing, you see, and I think they know that, and they know that we won't be paying attention to it. And what better day actually to do it than maybe this Friday when all the news will be about how the debates went?
Yeah. Victoria, we've got Esther from Santa Fe regarding PBS and the debate rules. You mind taking a call here?
Sure.
Okay. Hey, Esther, welcome to the program.
Glad
and
to be
Victoria.
Thank you for your radio station. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
It's the only sensible thing I have to listen to all day.
Oh, that's great. KTRC there in Santa Fe.
Yes.
Yeah, they do good. And thanks to Fred Senna for keeping us on the air.
Right.
So what's up, Esther?
I was listening to PBS this weekend, and I think it was, if I can remember right, Bill Moyers, and he was talking about the memo of understanding for the debates. And they said that they had a link, and there is a link on their web page, www.pbs.org, and it has the memo of understanding, which is 32 pages.
Right.
And I mean, it's down to nitpicking stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the podium shall be 41 inches center to center.
They can't carry notes. They can't have any kind of displays. They even have to have their notepad and pencils reviewed before.
That's right, regulation pencils.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
It's gotten to the point where I've said I'm not even going to bother listening.
Well,
nobody's talking about the fact that these things are sponsored by big corporations.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And we know that they're getting rehearsed, especially Bush.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's ever come up with an original thought or idea without having somebody else tell him what to say.
Well, and
of
he
course
is
he doesn't need to.
And he's absolutely, and he is a good debater. I mean, he debated very effectively against Ann Richards in Texas. He won the election in part because of those debates.
Yeah.
He debated very effectively against Al Gore. The Republicans are doing their best to drive down his expectations so that if he just doesn't engage in mouth breathing for an hour, he'll be viewed as the winner. But the reality is that he's a very competent debater.
I've heard that. I've never listened to him.
Yeah, Esther, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Esther.
For raising the point.
Bye.
I do appreciate it. Victoria, tell us about the corporations who are sponsoring these debates.
I wish I could give you the complete list of them because actually I've been trying to find it, but I know it's such people as Philip Morris. I mean, it's people who. Kind of like the usual suspects of big money, the people who you really wouldn't want something, you wouldn't want them sponsoring something your kids were involved in.
Yeah.
But the actual names, I wish I could tell you, but I can't. I don't have the names in front of me.
Yeah.
But it is quite bizarre.
Yeah, it is. These are the kind of things, I mean, this is why we have that little checkbox up at the top of the this isn't why, but it should be why. We have the little checkbox up at the top of the tax forms, and if they just raised it up to $5 and if everybody checked it, we would have an amount of money equal to what was spent in the 2000 election cycle, and we could have full public financing, and we wouldn't have corporations with their hands in the till, and it's so much could be done. It may require a Supreme Court judgment. Rolling back versus Boston versus Bilotti, rolling back even corporate personhood, and certainly taking taking some swipes at the First Amendment, which, frankly, I'm very skittery about. But this situation is out of control. We no longer have a government of, by, and for the people. We, with very few exceptions, the only one I can think of in Congress is Bernie Sanders, who has his fundraisers here in Vermont, where, you know, suggest a donation $25, and you come and, you know, drink beer and eat hot dogs and hang out with Bernie. But beyond that, it's money rules.
Yeah,
money absolutely rules in Washington, D.C. And this is wrong, you know, with a capital R, as George would say. It's wrong. It shouldn't be, or a capital W. Okay, any other news from Washington, Victoria Jones?
Those are pretty much the main things going on. Of course, more appallingness going on in Iraq. But that, of course, will be debated on Thursday night.
Yeah, the tragedy there. It is so sad. Those people just we must keep them in our prayers. The not just our soldiers, but the citizens of Iraq and the whole region. George Bush, his inability to take responsibility for the things that he does, his inability to feel empathy for other people, his inability to understand the consequences and significance of his actions throughout his whole entire life, but now in particular, is foisting such a tragedy in the United States. It is truly sad, and something that we can change. We can change in November. Victoria, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
I do appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Have a wonderful afternoon. It's 12 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman radio program with you. Aaron Starr wrote a piece in Newsday, the New York Newsday, you know, the New York newspaper, that I think is worth visiting just briefly. I was in New York City for the Republican National Convention. Louise and I were there actually together. And we broadcast live from the floor, and because we were broadcasting live from the floor, and our show is on from noon to 3 Eastern time, and we had to get there, you know, early in the morning, we had to do show prep. Afterwards, we had to get ready for the next day's program. You know, the reality is that this program takes, about 20 hours a day of show prep, and you know, to do 3 hours of live programming between the two of us. We didn't get out into the streets very much. Unfortunately, other than just going to and from where we were staying. And, you know, it would be nice to have the kind of budget to have the reporters to do that, and maybe someday we will, but at the moment we didn't. And so we're having to rely on these reports. And this one in the New York Newsday was particularly disconcerting. By Aaron Starr, my 21-year-old daughter disappeared from New York City last Tuesday afternoon. This, of course, back on September 13th. When walking with friends through a park where no protest was being held and was held prisoner without being charged by the New York Police Department for 3 days. Now, she was arrested at a so-called demonstration. She wasn't demonstrating. She just happened to be walking along the street. But the story gets truly bizarre when this parent calls and says, "Who has custody of my daughter?" I'll tell you about that right after this break. 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions. Restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
A group hopes to persuade the federal government to drain a huge reservoir in Utah. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the Glen Canyon Dam was completed in 1966, it created Lake Powell, a vast reservoir stretching 186 miles from the dam in northern Arizona up through southeastern Utah. The project was controversial from the start because it submerged the scenic Glen Canyon, and it's still generating controversy today. A group of activists at the Glen Canyon Institute want to breach the dam, drain the reservoir, and let the Colorado River run free. Chip Ward writes about the effort in his new book, Hope's Horizon. He says the proposal offered in 1996 was first seen as outrageous.
Well, as it turns out, that proposal to drain Lake Powell makes an awful lot of sense. For one thing, Lake Powell traps huge amounts of sediment that have radically transformed the ecosystem downstream in the Grand Canyon. The reservoir drowned at one of the most beautiful canyon systems in the country, probably more beautiful than any national park that we have set aside. And even as a means of storing water, the lake, when it reached its fullest level, was seeing more evaporation off the surface area than water that was coming in.
Lake Powell loses 22 billion cubic feet of water to evaporation each year. Ward says that's become a critical issue.
Of course, at this point, because of this prolonged drought that we're experiencing in the West, Lake Powell has started to drain itself. It's actually down below half of its capacity at this point, and canyons that we have not seen for 20 years are suddenly reemerging from the lake and are accessible again.
The Glen Canyon proposal faces enormous resistance from Utah politicians as well as marina owners and other economic interests around Lake Powell. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Aaron Starr writes this piece. Aaron Starr, who lives on Makawao, Maui, Hawaii. 21-year-old daughter in New York City during the RNC. Disappeared. She had a cell phone with her. They were calling hysterically, what's going on? Finally, the first day discovered that from the New York Police Department, the first day and night she spent in an unsafe and inhumane facility at Pier 57. Pier 57. My husband called the New York Police Department to ask who was managing Pier 57. He was given the number for the Republican National Committee. Ed Gillespie, the former lobbyist for Enron, now chairman of the Republican National Committee, running a private prison in New York City into which prisoners are being shoveled by the New York Police Department. You get this? The Republican National Committee. My husband and I looked at each other in silent, cold horror. In America, the Republicans have set up a private detention camp for their political prisoners that can hold 1,000 under inhumane and unsafe conditions. My husband slowly dialed that number, writes Aaron Starr, got the RNC, and the Republican rep who answered the phone said, in answer to my husband's inquiries about safety, quote,
"Those protesters don't deserve a holiday, and they're all criminals anyway."
Say what? My daughter, who doesn't smoke or drink or do drugs and is a practicing Buddhist vegan, a criminal? My daughter, with hundreds of others, tried to sleep that first night on a chemical-covered, oily, cold cement floor of those pens without food or water, without being read her rights, without being offered a chance to post bail, without seeing a judge, although the National Lawyers Guild offered to represent them pro bono, without being charged or told why she was arrested and handcuffed and taken there, without being allowed to make a call to a lawyer or a friend or a parent or anyone. All cell phones were confiscated as terrorist weapons. Her purse was taken. She had nothing but the clothes on her back. My daughter, who had committed no crime, was incarcerated for 3 days incommunicado. The Republicans wanted to, quote, teach these protesters a lesson, end quote. They wanted to terrorize my daughter. Yes, the Republicans, the party of terror. But the lesson that the hundreds and hundreds of prisoners were taught was not the one that the Republican Party would intended, I would wager. She notes that during the Democratic convention, only six people were arrested. America, wake up, she says. Hitler told the German people that they would have to give up a few of your rights temporarily so we can fight the enemy. That's what Ashcroft said about the misnamed Patriot Act. The American flag that probably proudly waves at my front gate doesn't seem to be the same American flag the Republican Party is waving.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
The Swift Boat Veterans for Truth have been running ads attacking John Kerry's war record, and now Kerry is accusing the Bush administration of being in collusion with them. Just because the funding for these ads came from Karl Rove's friend Bob Perry, the Republican Party's top donor, doesn't mean the administration is behind them. No, we are. We've got too much money riding on this election. We can't afford to have a real war hero make our Georgie look like a coward for using his father's connection to avoid serving in Vietnam. Darling, any sucker can enlist to go off and fight a war. It takes a really brave man to start one. I'm Zena Fobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The SEIU is preparing to join Hispanic leaders and pro-immigrant groups in protesting California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's veto of legislation that would have allowed illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. And supporters charge that a last-minute demand by Schwarzenegger to place a mark on licenses that would differentiate them from those held by legal residents and citizens would have encouraged discrimination if implemented. The Service Employees International Union has more than 30,000 members across California and has promised to assist the proponents of the legislation in boycotting and protesting at convention centers and hotels across the state.
New Bush administration rules could squeeze low-income tenants out of their homes. George Bush wants to alter the formula used to calculate an average rent price. The Mass Alliance of HUD tenants warn that could leave hundreds of thousands homeless. Section 8 recipients pay 30% of their income in rent, and the federal government picks up the rest to what is deemed a fair market price. Under the new proposal, high-cost rents in big cities like New York would be averaged together with cheaper rents in surrounding suburban areas.
Well, the Bush administration is really trying to undermine the entire Section 8 program and force people out on the streets. as a way to save money to pay for the tax cuts to the rich and the war in Iraq.
Mike O'Kane, National Director of Mass Alliance of HUD Tenants, says the changes will be devastating for a third of the 1.9 million families who depend on Section 8.
They propose a cutback for next year of 250,000 families and 600,000 by 2009. That's in their actual budget proposals. You know, we believe that homeland security should begin with a home.
If the changes go through, Section 8 tenants in New York City would have to pay 14% more for a four-bedroom apartment, and residents fear landlords will quit participating in the program. The final publication of the rules will be October 1st.
Oregon's largest dairy has been hit with a gender bias lawsuit. Three women filed the suit against Columbia River Dairy, alleging that they were not hired because of their sex. The United Farm Workers Union is supporting the women in that lawsuit, which seeks back pay, an order prohibiting discrimination, attorney's fee, and unspecified damages. Only two of the 150 workers currently employed at the farm appear to be women. Earlier this year, the dairy paid $70,000 to workers after a suit was filed alleging minimum wage violations.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Good diet and exercise lengthen your life, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. A good diet and regular exercise increase longevity and reduce age-related health problems. Incidence of memory and attention loss, including Alzheimer's disease, can be reduced by walking as little as 2 to 3 hours per week. Researchers have also found a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and olive oil increases longevity. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Excellent news, Americans. A new way to lie. In a nation that's gone from simple childhood fibs of my dog ate my homework to the more nefarious lies of a White House that has sent hundreds of people to die in Iraq on the false claims that Saddam Hussein was about to hit us with weapons of mass destruction, now we have new technology to extend the culture of lying to anyone with a cell phone. Yes, cell phones not only allow you to make calls or even take photographs, but also to join cells of cell phone liars who will help you cheat on your spouse, skip work, or you name it. Take the Alibi and Excuse Club, a network of some 3,400 subscribers, unknown to each other, who are willing to lie for you in exchange for you lying for them when they're in a pinch. Say you want to slip away for a weekend with a lover. What to tell your spouse? No problem. Just send out a message to the Alibi and Excuse group, and you're likely to get a volunteer who will call your spouse, posing as one of your bosses and explaining that you've been dispatched on an emergency sales mission to New York or Paris or Kalamazoo. You pay a fee to join the club, and you're also under some general obligation to return the favor when other members put out the call for a credible lie. Jumping on an entrepreneurial opportunity, others have found ways to add value to the lying phone schemes. For $2.99, for example, you can equip your cell phone to play the sounds of a rasping cough to simulate a lung infection while you're sitting on the beach sipping a cool one. You can also get honking horns and a screaming ambulance to simulate a traffic jam, thus explaining why you can't get home while you're actually chilling at a bar and watching the game. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, there could be glitches, such as if your spouse joins the same Alibi Club and takes your call for help in creating a lie so you can have an affair. Ouch.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. but I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the Board of Directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks again to Ramesh Schneider for ably filling in for this hour of our program last Friday as I was in Portland, Oregon, and had to go off and give an afternoon presentation. Followed an evening speech. It was a busy day. And Louise and I flew all night. Last night, this morning. Arriving in Burlington, Vermont here in the People's Republic at 9:30 this morning. And here we are. So, and I'm still coherent. It's amazing the resilience of the human body. Not to mention 6 cups of coffee. Anyhow, there is a Jan Peter Linke is now deceased. His wife, Janet, thinks she has a missing piece to the Bush National Guard puzzle. And this is a story. This is from the legitgov.org website. It's going to be really... keep your eyes open. Let's see if this thing gets any traction. My guess is that the mainstream media has decided after, you know, months and months and months of using the Swift vote lies to beat up on John Kerry and a less than a week of Bush pulling strings to get into the champagne unit before Dan Rather got brought down, not for any of the factual content of his article, but for the lineage, the provenance of several of his documents, which still have not been demonstrated to be forgeries. But they haven't been demonstrated to be real either. But they did a marvelous job at changing the subject. So I'm doubtful that any of the mainstream media, the corporate-owned media in America, are going to pick this up. But I think it's fascinating. You see, there is this interesting anomaly in George Bush's military records. These are flight logs that were just released 3 weeks ago by the White House. Just 3 weeks ago, as the result of a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit by the Associated Press. You may remember when that first was announced, the AP was doing this whole thing. You know, and in response to this lawsuit, we discover that in February and March of 1972, George Bush stopped flying the F-102-8 fighter jet. Now, we had a con on this show last week. I think it was Richard Viguerie going, you know, he was flying one of the most dangerous airplanes that there is. Well, you know, frankly, flying a Cessna 172, which is what I used to fly in Vietnam, is, I think, a whole lot more dangerous than flying an F-102 over the skies of Texas, but we'll set that aside for the moment. He stopped flying them. And this is the plane that the Guard used to patrol U.S. borders and went to a 2-seat T-33 training jet where he had another pilot with him. He was not willing or able to fly solo anymore. And then he asked to be switched from that to a flight simulator. And, you know, I mean, we have now known this for 3 weeks. This came out as a result of a Freedom of Information Act filing. These are George Bush's actual flight logs. And nobody has asked the question, to the best of my knowledge, or nobody has offered the answer to the question, why did he stop flying the single-seater plane and go to a 2-seater plane where he had to have somebody with him, and then very quickly stop flying that and go to the simulator? And, in fact, the record suggests the extra training sessions didn't help. Logs show that in March and April of 72, Bush twice needed multiple tries to land the F-102 fighter. I can tell you as a pilot, landing an airplane is the hardest part. And a hot airplane, a high-speed airplane, landing is more difficult than most. And twice in April of 1972, he was unable to land this aircraft, had to go around, try again. He was having a hard time. Days later, on April 16th, Bush piloted a plane for the Texas National Air National Guard for the last time. He gave up. Now comes Janet Lincke. And this from the Folio Weekly in Jacksonville, Florida. She lives there in Duval County. Article by Susan Cooper Eastman. Janet Lincke has been thinking about George W. Bush a lot lately. 32 years ago, her late husband, Jan Peter Lincke, served briefly in the Texas Air National Guard's 111th Fighter Interceptor Squadron. This is also known as the Champagne Unit that George W. was in. Lincke claims she knows a part of the story that nobody has mentioned. The reason George W. stopped flying single-seater fighter jets and went to the two-seater fighter jets where he had somebody flying with him and then had to stop that after just a few weeks and went to just simulators and finally couldn't even handle the simulators and went to Alabama and never again to fly, didn't show up for his flight physical. Turns out, according to her, and I'm quoting, Bush's flying career was permanently disabled by a crippling fear of flying. A crippling fear of flying. Contrary to some news reports that suggest Killian, her husband was a good friend of the late Colonel Jerry Killian, the guy who is the author of the memos whose authenticity is in dispute. Contrary to some news reports that suggest Killian admired Bush, Lincke says the officer didn't have much use for the young lieutenant. He mentioned that Bush appeared to have a drinking problem, she recalls, but he was most offended by another incapacity, Bush's fear of flying. According to Lincke, Killian said Bush was grounded in his fourth year flying after he became incapable of flying or properly landing a plane. As Lincke said, he was mucking up bad, Killian told us. He just became afraid to fly. So you may find this of interest. It's in the Jacksonville, Florida Folio Weekly. You can find it off the legitgov.org website. There's a link to it, I believe, from BuzzFlash today. So another piece of the puzzle, of the varied puzzle. And another question that you can bet money will not be answered in the debates coming up, any of the debates coming up over the next few weeks between John Kerry and George W. Bush, seeing as how the questions are being so carefully vetted by the toadies who are representing the corporate sponsors of the events. Do you see where, I think it's Sumner Redstone, the head of Viacom, which just paid $250,000 or $500,000 fine for Janet Jackson flipping her boob on national TV, even though she had a pasty on it. I mean, it was technically wasn't illegal, but nonetheless, they paid the fine, and this guy has now come out in favor of George Bush's reelection. Why? He says it's better for his business. Why? Well, because John Kerry's on record as saying that he would consider appointing a Democrat to the FCC, which means that the FCC is going to start breaking up the big media combines so that we can have democracy in the United States, democracy in our media. We can have actual local voices. We can have dispute and dissent. Can't have that, says the head of Viacom, which owns ABC, among other things, movie studios, this, that, and the other thing. Let's go to the phone lines here. I've got a little more stuff here on Baghdad. We got a pile of news here to get to as well. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Scott in New Mexico on the line about the upcoming debates. Hey, Scott, what's up? Oop, got a potch up here.
See if you can identify who said the following quote. Quote, I just don't think it's the role of the United States to walk into a country and say, we do it this way, so should you. But I think one way for us to end up being viewed as the ugly Americans is for us to go around the world saying, we do it this way, so should you. I think the United States must be humble and must be proud and confident of our values, but humble in how we treat nations that are figuring out how to chart their own course. Can you guess who said that?
Sure, it was George Bush in the first debates with Al Gore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys may have talked about this before. There is a wonderful site. Besides another Republican for Kerry, there's just Republicans for Kerry. And there is a link on that site. There are many wonderful links, including one that I just quoted from, where it talks about rhetoric versus reality. And it's not just from 2000, you know, pre-9/11. It goes through the whole thing from a conservative point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Incredible stuff.
Yeah, I have actually, for today's show, I don't think we're going to have time to get to it, Unlike Father, Unlike Son, Comparing George Bush and Senior and Junior, which is from a conservative point of view. It's really kind of spooky. But, yeah, Scott, you raise... See, people ask, well, how did George W. get elected? I mean, you know, it's the guy's a radical. He's a neocon. He's you know, he's the first president of a major sovereign nation since Adolf Hitler in 1938-39 to have attacked a defenseless country. Well, 39 is invasion of Poland, saying that they had weapons of mass destruction that they were going to use against them. Turned out they didn't. How did people elect? People elected him because he lied to us. And what you did was just, you know, laid out one of the many lies, one of the many Bush lies that he lied to us during the debates in 2000. And you can fully expect that he's going to lie to us again during these debates, because that's the story of George W.'s life. Very, very straightforward.
And it's amazing, you know, jumping over to one of the other sites, you had the guy on the program, another Republican for Kerry.
Yeah.
He talks about Kerry being at a front porch, and there's like 10 or 12 Bush-Cheney supporters on the side of a hedge. And, you know, Kerry's finished with the rally, whether he talks about it, and he's back to his car, and he reaches across this hedge to shake the hands of each and every one of those Bush-Cheney supporters. And the Bush-Cheney guy says afterwards, you know, I have to reluctantly say this, but I was really impressed by that.
Yeah. Well, the reality of the matter is that Bush has a worldview that says you're either with us or you're the enemy. And John Kerry has a worldview that says that all people are fundamentally good and that all people can be brought around, or that at least the vast majority. I mean, there are a few among us who are so wounded and dysfunctional they're irredeemable, but they're not the people who show up for political rallies by and large. And that if you simply educate most Americans, you know, he trusts the wisdom of the American people. George Bush doesn't trust the wisdom of the American people. He had to sign loyalty oaths to get into his events, him and Dick Cheney. I mean, it's just very simple. It's Jefferson versus Adams all over again. And a sad one. Scott, thanks for the call. Good to hear from
you.
Thanks, Tom. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. Discussing solutions and not false promises, as you will hear on so many of the other con programs. This here is the True People's Radio. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the latest State Department data, Iraq's crude oil revenues fell by an average of more than $24 million a day in the month of August, bringing the month's total losses to over $620 million. Almost daily attacks on pipelines and pumping stations have brought oil exports to their lowest levels since October 2003. The decline couldn't have come at a worse time, with world oil prices reaching record highs.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
From writers and critics who prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. So much going on in the news today. Bush in Maine. This last week, George Bush showed up in the state of Maine to campaign. Guess where the money came from? Yes, actual cost to the city. This is from the Bangor Daily News. Actual cost to the city won't be determined until after the event. Any overtime accrued by Bangor police officers will be paid for by a Homeland Security grant. West Virginia. The Parkersburg News and Sentinel, West Virginia. Expenses incurred by the city from Sunday's massive rally for President Bush will be paid for from a Homeland Security grant. And on it goes. We can't protect our ports. We can't protect our chemical factories. We can't protect our refineries. But we can use Homeland Security money to protect George W. Bush. 1-866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Ryan.
I just got a kick out of when you were talking about Bush's fighter pilot fear, and that dovetails directly in to his horseback phobia.
Yeah, he's afraid of horses as well.
You know, if you're afraid of something, avoid it. Now, and as I was on hold, I got to thinking, what a dramatic difference. I have no doubt that if John Kerry ever had a phobia, he just confronted it, worked his way through it, or if he wasn't able to get through it by himself, he got some help to get through it.
Yeah,
because he is so totally comfortable with himself, he has the emotional quotient to take care of it.
Yeah,
and he feels good about himself.
And Kerry is a pilot even today. I mean, Kerry flies his own airplanes today.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a licensed private pilot. He's a licensed private pilot.
Oh, okay. But anyway, it's just, it goes back to emotional balance.
Yeah.
Kerry is comfortable with himself. That's why he doesn't have any problem chatting with people that he disagrees with, because he is so firm in his convictions that he figures he can talk to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so,
well said.
Anyway.
And another reason why he's willing to reach across the hedge and shake the hands of the Bush supporters. Whereas the Bush folks would be, having the Secret Service drag them off in handcuffs.
And isn't it somewhere in the New Testament that you're supposed to love your enemies?
Yeah, it is. But I think George is reading a different book. The only thing I can figure out is that he has not read the book I read. It just doesn't make sense. Roy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
You too. 27 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Greg in Boston on the line, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Greg, what's up?
I had to take off speaking of the drum so I could listen to it. How you doing?
Great.
Hey, listen, the reason that we're in a deficit, cheap labor conservatives love running a deficit. There's less money to spend on social stuff, and they buy up the T-bills like George W. Bush. He's got a ton of them. And they get the tax-exempt money, tax-free interest on the money that they lend the government, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The bigger the deficit, the more money they personally make. They love it.
Well, and not only that, they deflate the currency, but if you're a holder of cash as opposed to a borrower of cash, if you're a borrower of cash and inflation happens, you're in deep trouble because the interest rates go up and then you have to pay more. It depends. I mean, if you've got a fixed-rate mortgage or something, then actually you can end up making out well as a result of inflation. But most people don't. Their credit card bills go up, things like that. And on the other hand, if you're one of those people who are lending, it provides you with an opportunity to make even more money, because lenders always, there's always a spread between the actual rate of inflation and the rate of interest. And that spread seems to widen the higher interest goes. So, it's just an opportunity for profit.
Yeah, and one more thing. CBS is owned by Viacom, not ABC.
That's CBS, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. So
I love
the show.
Thank you, Greg. I love it when you guys keep me honest. I really do.
Well, I heard you say it like Wednesday, too, and I couldn't get
did
it.
Did I? Yeah.
I'm from Port St. Lucie, Florida, really. I mean, I'm really from Boston. You can tell by my accent. But
yeah.
I live in Port St. Lucie, and my house was wiped out in a hurricane.
So oh, geez.
Now I got to go down there. I was just getting ready to go over to the Gulf for my fifth time this year.
Well, good luck, Greg. I appreciate it.
Hi. I'm David Orrick. Debbie Thompson from Nevada writes, "No one in our area thought the fires in California would affect us 300 miles away, but they did. Your fantastic air purifiers kept our home clear of the dust and smoke. They were a real lifesaver." Folks, just how effective is an Orrick professional air purifier? Well, call us at 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Try one free for 90 days.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The SEIU is preparing to join Hispanic leaders and pro-immigrant groups in protesting California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's veto of legislation that would have allowed illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. And supporters charge that a last-minute demand by Schwarzenegger to place a mark on licenses that would differentiate them from those held by legal residents and citizens would have encouraged discrimination if implemented. The Service Employees International Union has more than 30,000 members across across California and has promised to assist the proponents of the legislation in boycotting and protesting at convention centers and hotels across the state.
New Bush administration rules could squeeze low-income tenants out of their homes. George Bush wants to alter the formula used to calculate an average rent price. The Mass Alliance of HUD tenants warn that could leave hundreds of thousands homeless. Section 8 recipients pay 30% of their income in rent, and the federal government picks up the rest to what is deemed a fair market price. Under the new proposal, high-cost rents in big cities like New York would be averaged together with cheaper rents in surrounding suburban areas.
Well, the Bush administration is really trying to undermine the entire Section 8 program and force people out on the streets as a way to save money to pay for the tax cuts to the rich and the war in Iraq.
Michael Caine, National Director of Mass Alliance of HUD Tenants, says the changes will be devastating for a third of the 1.9 million families who depend on Section 8.
They propose a cutback for next year of 250,000 families and 600,000 by 2009. That's in their actual budget proposals. You know, we believe that homeland security should begin with a home.
If the changes go through, Section 8 tenants in New York City would have to pay 14% more for a four-bedroom apartment, and residents fear landlords will quit participating in the program. The final publication of the rules will be October 1st.
Oregon's largest dairy has been hit with a gender bias lawsuit. Three women filed the suit against Columbia River Dairy, alleging that they were not hired because of their sex. The United Farm Workers Union is supporting the women in that lawsuit, which seeks back pay, an order prohibiting discrimination, attorney's fee, and unspecified damages. Only two of the 150 workers currently employed at the farm appear to be women. Earlier this year, the dairy paid $70,000 to workers after a suit was filed alleging minimum wage violations.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Good diet and exercise lengthen your life, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. A good diet and regular exercise increase longevity and reduce age-related health problems. Incidence of memory and attention loss, including Alzheimer's disease, can be reduced by walking as little as 2 to 3 hours per week. Researchers have also found a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and olive oil increases longevity. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
With your guns and drums and drums and guns, hooroo, hooroo. With your guns and drums and drums and guns, hooroo, hooroo. With your guns and drums and drums and guns, the enemy nearly slew you. My darling dear, you looked so queer. Johnny, I hardly knew you.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, or 511-6227. For all things Macintosh, be sure you tell them when you call that you heard about them on the Tom Hartman program. And EcoWine, the organic wine company. If you want to learn about organic wines, they've got some real bargains right now. 1-888-ECO-WINE, E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Some really, really fine products there. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 26 minutes before the hour. Conceptual Gorilla, a year or so ago, we had him on this program. I'm drawing a blank on the fellow's name who runs the website, but it's conceptualgorilla.org, and that's gorilla as in G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A. And some just great talking points, which our last guest, Greg in Boston, brought up. I want to get to those in just a second, but first let's take this call from Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's going on, Tom? Hey, I'll do really quick because I know you guys are running out of time, but I got two questions and a couple comments.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, whatever happened to the lady that got arrested for talking to the reporter and was wearing the shirt, George Bush killed my son? Have we heard anything from her since?
You know, I the last story that I heard about that was about a week ago. I'll follow up on that and let you know.
If you give me her name, I can follow up on it too.
Yeah, Yeah, and if any of our listeners know anything about it, you know, just give us a call, 866-8894, or drop into the TomHartmann.com message board and leave a note about it.
And also, I was going to also tell you that C-SPAN is running past presidential debates, and last Friday night they ran one of the Bush-Gore 2000 elections.
Oh, really?
Where Bush actually said that quote that you just read, that one of the callers just read.
Right, right.
And I just about fell out of my wheelchair when I heard that. I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
He also said that our troops were too outstretched or something like that.
Yeah, the deal was that an entire division was unavailable to be called up from the reserves. And while he was governor, in the last year of his being governor, he had cut funding to that division, which was in the state of Texas. And there are some who suspect that he did that simply so that in the next election he could claim, and by inference blame it on Bill Clinton, that an entire division was unavailable to be called up. But it was the Texas division, and he had been the governor there, and he had been responsible for the funding of it.
Well, and one last thing I want to bring up. You know, we can talk on all of the shows that we listen to all we want. But what we really need to do is, and I encourage all the Tom Hartner listeners to do this, we've got to call in with all this great information to all the right-wing talk shows, not just to show the right-wingers, but to let them know that we're very well informed also. And this is what I tell all the right-wingers. I say, look, don't take my word for it. Don't take anybody's word for it. Research it on your own.
Yeah.
If you don't believe me, go out there. There's plenty of access to all this information. You know, we don't have to lie about the information we say.
Yeah,
you're more than welcome to go verify it on your own. Check it out on your own.
Yeah, the problem you're going to find with that, Sean, the problem you're going to find with that is threefold. One is that by and large, they're never going to do that research because it's become very much a my team, your team, and they're not going to go look that stuff up. Just like when I have conservatives on here, from time to time they'll actually make a good point. Nobody's going to go looking at their website to check it out. And secondly, they're not going to let you on. They're by and large.
I noticed they don't take too many phone calls.
That's right. Their call screeners are very, very good, and which is the exact opposite of this program. We don't get a lot of calls from conservatives on this program, and I think it's because conservatives have just given up listening. They're afraid to speak. I think it's that they're afraid to speak, because I get a lot of emails from them, ranging from hate mail to people trying to engage me in arguments. But they just don't want to go on the air, and I wish they would. I would love to get more conservatives on here. In fact, when conservatives call, I always move them to the front of the line. I want to hear from people who disagree with me. Number one, I think it makes better radio. Number two, I think it gives our listeners an opportunity to model how to win the water cooler wars. In other words, you know, listening to me argue with these guys, they can say, oh, you know, so that's how you do it. That's what you say, you know, or at least one way. I mean, I'm not holding myself up as the ultimate model of how to argue with conservatives, but it's one. And third, if you're going to call them, it means you have to listen to them. And you might find that your time would be better spent calling your local radio stations and saying, hey, how about putting liberal talk radio on the air? If I may humbly suggest.
Just to see what the enemy's up to.
Yeah.
So one of the good things about saying, if you don't believe me, go check it out, whether they research it or not, it makes you sound like you're pretty darn good and sure of the information that you have.
Yeah.
You know, that you are so sure that it's true that you often, you never hear Rush Limbaugh say, go look it up yourself, go ask anybody.
Yeah.
You know, you never hear the right winger say that. But if we say that, whether they research it or not, and I do think if you would, then that at least makes us sound a lot more confident. And we are, darn it. We're right about this.
There you go. I absolutely agree with you, Sean. And the other thing is to be respectful and full of facts, just straightforward with the facts. Well, but the odds are you're not going to get past their screeners. They really don't want to hear the other side. They really don't, unless it's somebody that they figure that they can take apart. Particularly on the right wing TV shows. I mean, Fox News has turned this into an art form, finding the most inarticulate liberals they can, and putting them up against very articulate conservatives, and making it look like liberals are just incompetent and they don't have anything to say. They've absolutely turned it into an art form. Sean, I appreciate the call. Thanks for the.
Thanks
for checking in with us. 20 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. David in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on gold prices and the economy. David, I'm guessing you're going to confirm for me that the price of gold did not go to 484, that it's around 408.
No, I don't know what the price of gold is, Tom. Okay. You there?
Yeah, I am, and you are too.
I don't know what the price of gold is, but I know that you said that if that's true, it's going to be a major story. I went to a link somewhere. I forget who wrote the book, but I was looking at this site, and there was a pull quote from it that says, the day that China, because you were talking about the devaluation of the American dollar.
Right.
And this guy was saying, the day that China decides that their money is better in euros than in dollars, America's going to become the new Venezuela.
Oh, yeah, we're toast.
And I wonder what your commentary on that is.
Well, they're buying about a third of, a little less than a third of our total annual debt. And the only way that George Bush is able to continue his borrow and spend policies is by having China and other countries that have large trade deficits with us, but China being the largest one, probably Saudi Arabia being the second largest, continue to loan us money. And they loan us money by buying our treasury bills, because our treasury bills are just IOUs. And there's an auction for these things, you know, every few weeks of different kinds, and a major auction every month. And then there's these quarterly auctions as well for the long bills. And the day that they stop buying these things, the day that they go out into the open market and just start dumping them at any price, you're going to see the dollar go into a free fall, and it's going to be blood on the floor. It's going to be horrible. And they may well do that. This may be the reason why the Bush administration has been toadying up to the Chinese, this conservative Republican administration that reflects, you know, 50 years of support of Taiwan. They have been toadying up to the Red Chinese, the Communist Chinese, and saying to Taiwan, no, you may not have a referendum. You should not discuss independence. We are not going to go along with that, because they're just scared to death, because China right now is in a position to devastate our economy, absolutely devastate our economy, and the Chinese know it. They know it. They talk about it in their internal journals. This is no secret to anybody who's an economist or in the world of economics, or for that matter, in the world of politics. Every member of Congress knows this. But I don't think the average American has a clue. They just keep on buying at Walmart.
And nothing's being done about it to reverse it?
It's
terrible.
No. In fact, what George Bush is doing is he's making it worse day by day, because he's doing what's called credit card prosperity. In order to get himself reelected, he's got to spend money. And in order to spend that money, when you don't have that money, he's got to borrow that money. And the only people in the world right now who have the kind of money that we need, I mean hundreds of billions to trillions of dollars, the only people in the world who have that kind of money are the people that we are buying so many goods from, that they have so many of our dollars that they got to figure out something to do with them, so they loan them back to us, and that's China.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a mess. It is a mess. Whoever is the president, whoever's elected president on November 2nd, 2004, is going to have one huge mess to clean up. I mean, a huge mess to clean up. And I sure hope that they, you know, whether it's George Bush or whether it's John Kerry, that they sit down and speak honestly with the American people about the kind of disaster that this trickle-on economics of Bush and, you know, and Reagan have brought upon the United States, and because there really are only two options out of this, and one is very unpleasant, that's destroying the economy of the United States the way the Germans did in the 20s, and the other is raising taxes, erecting trade barriers, and paying down the debt at an incredibly radical rate, which is going to cause, over the short term, a real significant reduction in the average standard of living in the United States, although it would also, if we did it correctly with tariffs and if we did it correctly with a massive Manhattan Project-style program to birth an entire industry of alternative energy, it could create tens of millions of jobs and reinvigorate the American economy in some ways. I mean, some parts of the economy are going to be badly dislocated, others, and it could bring back production. It could bring back clothing production in the United States, bring back steel production in the United States. I mean, there's so many things that could be done, but right now we have a situation where we have bought so much stuff from overseas that these foreign countries have ended up with so much cash, so much American cash, that they have no place to park it, that they're buying America. They own 7% of all American businesses, and it's growing every single day. And this is because Bush is doing credit card economics in order to create the appearance of good times so that he can get reelected. The same thing that Ronald Reagan did, and these are the only two presidents, as far as I can tell, in the history of the Republic, to be so irresponsible and so destructive to America itself and to the American economy to pull this off. And this, by the way, is not the ravings of some right-wing or some left-wing radical. You will find this exact same position in Barry Goldwater's book, No Apologies. I mean, this is just right, left, middle. This is economics. This has nothing to do with politics.
Well, you really fleshed it out for us, Tom. I appreciate that.
Good.
And is that jump in the gold price, is that like an indicator that you could be heading toward the tipping point for this?
Yes, it is. The jump in the gold price is not a jump in the price of gold. It's a drop in the value of the dollar.
Exactly. I see.
Yep.
Whew. All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Yep. Talk to you later, David. I appreciate hearing from you. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, two things, Tom. Number one, I just achieved a personal best. I signed up my 50th person to vote.
Congratulations. So, that's great.
I know. It's pretty good. And if everybody out there that's listening to the show, gets 10 or 15 or 20 people to vote, we'll get rid of these jokers.
Chuck, are you doing this door-to-door or are you doing it on the telephone?
Both. Telephone, door-to-door, stand out in front of the local supermarket. I mean, whatever it takes.
And Chuck, before you got into doing this, what was your political background? What have you done in the past?
Nothing.
Nothing. You've been part of the great unwashed masses of non-voters, non-participants.
Well, I supported Ralph Nader in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go way back, way back in 1968, I went door to door for Nixon.
Uh-huh. So we have similar histories.
I got a tone for my sins.
Yeah.
I've had it. I mean, I served in Vietnam. I'm watching people die in Iraq, and we got to get this clown out of there. We've got to do it. And I finally thought, I call you on a regular basis, but I'm preaching to the choir when I talk to your listeners. Mostly, but I just the best success I had was with a clipboard just standing in front of the local Smith supermarket.
That's wonderful.
Walk up and down the road and talk to people and just say, have you voted before? No, you should. Here's the story. This is why it's important. And I don't even know who they're going to vote for, but we're getting them out.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. Well done, Chuck. And how did now just for our listeners' sake. What did you have to do to get into this position? Who do you
call? The phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage...
No matter how the American political system can...
Thurston, where did you suddenly get that walkie-talkie?
I've had it all along, my dove. You see, the statute of limitations on my creative accounting is up. Time to end this tropical charade and return to our billions.
Oh, do we have to go back? It's so cozy here on the island.
My dear, don't you listen to the coconut radio? It's the best time ever to be a billionaire in America. More than half of the last tax cut went to the wealthiest 5%.
But the voters will never allow that kind of thing.
That's what's so marvelous, lovey. The middle class believes they're going to be billionaires someday.
Well, anything's possible in America.
Oh, your naivete is so charming. My love. The fact is, the gap between them and us is getting wider all the time. W's our boy.
Bush Economics. More than just a three-hour tour. Paid for by BillionairesTheBush.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. In a sweeping agreement covering more than 8,000 farm workers in a federal visa worker program, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee has ended its five-year boycott of the nation's second-largest pickle company, Mount Olive.
Well, we came to terms with the company and the North Carolina Grower Association last week in an agreement that covers over 8,000 workers on over 1,000 farms in North Carolina.
President of the FLOC, Baldomir Velasquez, says they won the largest union contract in North Carolina's history.
We have a three-step grievance procedure. We eliminated blacklisting. If they complained about something, they were put on a blacklist and then put in the government computer so the worker could never enter the country again on any kind of visa. And we have a seniority system now where workers are able to apply in order of their seniority and reclaim those jobs the next year. And the union will be overseeing this hiring effort in Mexico during the winter months. Mount Olive agreed to put out a 10% wage increase over the next 3 years. So the agreement stretches from Mexico to Ohio.
Unions, churches, and students mounted a massive pressure campaign, including picketing grocery stores. A company spokesperson said Mount Olive is very relieved the boycott is over. Velasquez believes there are two reasons the FLOC was successful.
They were spending more time fighting protests and other things that we did to get their attention than running their business is one reason. And the other reason is, I think, is just spiritual. We prayed fervently, and boom, the pieces just came together.
There's been no time for celebration, with only 7 full-time organizers trying to implement the labor agreement on more than 1,000 farms. The FLOC is now setting its sights on helping undocumented workers at non-Mount Olive farms. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Ed from San Juan, California. Hey, Ed. Ed's call got dropped. We've been having some little funky problems with the telephone line here. Ed, thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. Rama says to be sure to say hi and thank you for the kind words about the program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go to Armin in Florida. Hey, Armin. Another hurricane, another day, huh?
Yeah, I just got through cleaning up our own mess here around the house and everything. And, boy, I'll tell you what, it's great exercise, but it's getting old.
Yeah, yeah. So what's on your mind?
Well, I was thinking yesterday about the 80s and Reagan and Reaganomics, and we all know now about how trickle-nomics was a real farce. And I was thinking, the most frightening world to me, looking forward, would be a world where everything was totally privatized. And the Enrons and the Halliburtons and the Cheneys and the Bushes would be their puppets for the masters that run and own the most stock in those corporations.
You know, we've had that world before, Armin. It's called feudalism. It dominated Europe for 1,000 years. It dominated Japan for 500 years. It's an old, old form of governance.
And I hope it stays in history, backwards, that is, and I hope it stays an old, old, antiquated monster that it is.
Yeah, well, it's making its ugly head is rising again. It did in the 1880s and 90s. We beat it back in the 1930s with the revolution of Franklin Roosevelt called the New Deal. And hopefully
right.
John Kerry will get elected and beat it back again. If not, we're going to have to wait another 4 years. But in the meantime, we can be educating people and preparing the ground for it, because the fighting back of feudalism in the 1930s didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened as a result of 50 years of the progressive and populist movement, educating people, preparing the ground for it.
Right. You know, Tom, do you reflect, like I do occasionally, back to Ronald Reagan when he was meeting with Gorbachev and the supposed communist leaders of the communist bloc over there? And do you feel like I do that he was telling them, we can get to the totalitarianism government that you guys have, but we do it a better way because we do it with platitudes and facades in the media, and
yeah.
The people are...
Armin, I actually think that Reagan, for all his faults, and I'll give you a long list of them, was an idealist and believed his own rhetoric, even though his own rhetoric was by and large and most often nonsense. I think he believed it. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Rama Schneider for coming in and engineering our program, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to you for listening.
To the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.